Start. Okay, I'm Paul Bune. I'm working with Raul. Actually, Raul hired me for some projects. So today I'm supposed to talk about reinforcement learning, and I'll talk about this for an hour or so. I'll just assume a little bit about Markov decision processes for you. This wouldn't be any hard lecture. It should be pretty easy. Okay. So I think Raul covered the MDP models. We know how to find optimal policies, right? How do we find optimal policies for MDP? What?
Policy and value.
Yeah, policy and value iteration. Correct. So problem of reinforcement learning starts with if you don't have target Markov model. That means you don't know the state space, you don't know transition function, then how we deal with such model. So you think about in a maze where you don't know the actual roadmap of the map, then you are in a maze. You have to figure out where you are first, and then you can get out of the maze. So that's what you have to think about when you are talking this reinforcement learning. So I don't know whether any of you have seen this before. This is called micromouse competition. Have any of you saw this? It's pretty old. So actually, this happened quite popular in like 20 years ago, I guess. Yeah, it 20 years ago, it was very popular. They had held world international competition. So what you are gonna do is you build this machine, which has its own wheels, and you program something. So you use a fan motor. I don't know whether any of you heard of it. It's basically this speed can be easily controlled with the voltage of the input. So you put this, and then goal is finding the center spot. So the assumption is this map is not known to this machine. So the goal is getting to the center position as fast as you can. The thing that this thing does is it wanders around the world, and then it figures out where to go, and then it quickly go to the direction. So there are two stages in this problem. In the real competition, at first they let the machine just wander around the world and see if how fast it can find the center spot. And then second run, the machine is put on any of the map and see if how it can then again find the goal as fast as it can. So it's very ideal model for reinforcement learning, where basically it does not know the model of the map, but it somehow builds the map model and then find the path to the goal. Okay. This is another example. Can we use reinforcement learning in the game? About 14 years ago, the guy called Tesauro built this reinforcement learning based backgammon player. Any of you know backgammon? Okay, so many of you probably know the game. Actually, I know the game a little bit. I forgot a lot, but it's like two-player game. I guess you somehow move all of your stones in some other position, then you win. So how you apply? So how you apply the reinforcement learning here? The idea is it's somehow you do some of your moves, like in some position you do some action like move the. I really don't know exact rule, but you can potentially move any of the stone available, and you do that, and you eventually went on to win. Then somehow you have the training data you have in your hand because you want. You want to follow this trajectory. Okay, you want to rebuild this trajectory later. Suppose you lost at some point. Like you play. So here, there is actually in between the state sequence is actually very non-deterministic because there is opponents involved. Right after you move, opponents move, and then you move. But still, you can watch what you did in the course of the action, and you don't want to do this again, right? So in the end, this backgammon program actually won against human master. So how you update the model or value function is a simple function that updates. You will see again in the later part of the lecture. And then I don't know. I've seen Rao's last lecture slide talking about row routes. Do you remember any of that, or did he talk about row routes? Okay, then I'll just move on. So I'll just review Markov vision process a little bit. Just make sure all things are in your mind. We have usually four components. There are a set of states, S, and there are a set of actions, A. And then transition probability. If you take an action A in state S, you move to another state with some probability. And also there is a reward function. What's the goal of MDP problem? What?
Maximize the
what? Reward? Right, right. So actually, what do you get after you solve your MDP? Yeah, you get a policy, right? Policy is a mapping from state to one action. There are two objectives for your policy. What are they? There are two objectives for MDPs. That's one is discounted reward. The other is average reward. So you want to maximize either of them typically. So this is a brief overview of Markov decision processes. Then what makes this reinforcement learning harder? The first thing is you have no knowledge about the environment. I have shown you in the first example, in the maze, you don't know where you are, but you have to figure out whether there is any wall or the length of the wall or something like that. So there is no knowledge of the environment. That's a big problem. You have to build your transition function if it's needed by yourself. Then what makes harder is actually the maze problem is easier because all of your actions are deterministic. But if you think about the second problem, backgammon problem, the next state after your action is totally non-deterministic because I think there is dice involved at least. Another thing is the opponent can take any action, so you have non-deterministic effect. So those are initially unknown. You have to figure out what this action incurs to you. The other thing is the reward is very infrequent, and it is sometimes very rare. Like if you won the backgammon game, after the win loss is decided, what is the really critical move that made you the win the game? For example, in a chess, you made some move, but you made a lot of moves, but at the end you made a checkmate. Is that the critical move that has all the reward? Or maybe it was very much before that move, you moved some pawn that was actually critical in your achieving the reward. So this rare reward, infrequent reward, and the delayed reward, it just makes the problem harder. Okay, still, it is, if you don't know the world model, somehow you need to apply some algorithm to act better. So that's where we have to decide. You have to anyways decide even though you don't know what to do. So that's where we are starting here. So let's make it clear what this delay. Okay, hold on. What? Exception exception. Sure, it can. You can be modeled as non-deterministic transition to another state.
But we don't know
it. Sure, we don't know. Yeah, it can be made that way. Okay. So delayed reward problem, again, I'll just show you a more simpler problem. So in this state S, there are two moves you can take, upper or go down. And then when you reach this S2 prime state, you get big reward. And what you think is, you can easily think that obviously, you are so smart, you don't think that action taken this S prime is actually not the reason, but actually the action taken at this stage is real reason for you to get the big reward. But this stupid machine may not know which action was really, really, really helpful. So this is one big problem for delayed reward. You get reward here, but actually, the reason was here. So this is the reason for delayed reward problem. So anyone can think what? So anyone can think is the connection of value iteration and pulse iteration problem here? So I think all of you right now know as the fact that pulse iteration is faster than value iteration. Why? Well, sure. So one thing, if you can think of running some applying pulse iteration here, if you start with big value function here. So, for the value iteration to get this value propagated back to this state, it takes a lot of iteration. And then the other problem is, if you start with very wrong value function, where this state has big value function, eventually they will get to go to zero. But at the start, what makes this, at some point, if this has big reward, this action looks like good. So you do that in value iteration, and it takes a lot of more iterations for you to get to converge to the correct value function. But if you think about policy iteration, you fix one policy, and then evaluate them, and then you update your policy at least and most two pulse iterations, this can get the point faster. So I just want to make sure that this it's not exactly the number of values available that's really important to your value iteration. Rather, it is if you fix your policy, it converges faster That's the real reason why policy iteration is better. Actually, that's very orthogonal to this issue, but it's, I just want to make sure this delayed reward is one of the biggest enemy for reinforcement learning. So I'll just, before go to the several techniques developed, I'll just make sure what the overall reinforcement learning characteristics are. Something is unknown. Unlike, so compared to Markov fusion processes where you know all the transition function, reward, unlike them, that there is something is unknown. Like transition function is unknown, reward function is unknown. You need to learn them and then plan. So it's also, it's quite actually the summary of this class. This class name is planning and learning. But this reinforcement learning is really doing combining these things together, learning the domain model and then planning too. Okay? So it's the ultimate learning and planning paradigm. But obviously, other Markov fusion processes approaches, it has a scalability issue. It doesn't scale too well. It's very challenging. But what's ironical is RL is actually most successful, has most successful in real application. So think about this. So obviously, you know, the stress planning has a better representation. It is relational. It can represent bigger problems. Also, the solution, it scales much better. But somehow, for some reason, if you think about in the literature where real application has been tested, surprisingly, not Markov fusion processes, even harder problems like RL, it gets award. You think about this, reinforcement learning approach to job scheduling, and then backgammon gameplay, and then vulnerability assessment of peer-to-peer networks. So it has been applied to real application and successful. Why? Can you guess why?
Because it's hard to model a real application. I mean, to model the domain behind the real application.
Right.
To model it completely is tough. So I guess planning, like script planning, is probably working on flawed assumptions.
Right. Yeah. I really don't know why. I don't have any real answer. So I think the thing is, basically, RL techniques are not too complex. Very simple. But if you work hard to model target domain and give proper features, then RL can work quite well. Maybe that's the reason, and maybe people work really hard for these domains. Okay. Then I'll move on to two key aspects of the reinforcement learning that you will take after this class. When you think about reinforcement learning problem and solution approaches, there are two things you have to remember. First is how you update your value function or policy function. How you are given the trajectory you have, right? You experienced this action and this state. You move on. You have sequence set of what they call episodes, each experience. How you update your value function or policy function. That's one thing you have to remember about what each of the reinforcement learning techniques deal with it. And then second thing is how you explore. Like the maze problem, you think about the micro mouse problem, where do you go? You may want to explore, right? You may want to explore, or you think you know already pretty enough. So these two aspects are very important in building reinforcement learning algorithms. And all the algorithms have this distinctive way of updating value function or updating policy, and also a way of exploring the world. Okay. So we have there are, in a big view, two categories actually, but I somehow explicitly said here. So there are first is model-free and model-based. Well, it's kind of ironical in some sense because reinforcement learning, when you say that, it does not have exact model. But what means by model-based RL means it constructs the model explicitly, like a micromouse problem where when you want to do really well in the maze, you construct a maze in that small machine, then you can really get better. So one thing is, one RL method is construct the target transition function or Markov model explicitly, and then you solve the learned model. Okay, one well-known paper is E-cubed paper by Kearns and Singh. You may look for it if you want. Very theoretical paper about how you construct your model, and then how you solve the model. And then second approach is, well, I don't want to build a model exactly. I just want to learn how to act. That's a model-free RL. It just only concerns in each state what I'm going to take. But it's kind of, I think it's really, real life is model-free RL. We don't know exact transition functions of the world, but we know what to do. Like, you just study. You don't know what's going to happen after the studying hard, but you just study. Something like that. So model-free RL doesn't construct explicit all the Markov models, but it just finds which action works well in which state. Okay, and the representative technique. Also, what I'll talk about is Q-learning by Watkins. So these are two categories are separated by how whether you construct the model explicitly or you just ignore it. And then it's orthogonal. It's orthogonal. Whether you go there or there is orthogonal, there are also two ways to explore. So one thing is about, as I said in the right before. Okay. So two keys are how you update your model, how you update the value function. That's more related to model, whether you construct the model or model-free. And then the other, how you explore is more related to active learning or passive learning. Active learning means you try to explore, right? You try to explore as much as you can. Not exactly, but somehow you want to explore the world at your own will. It's sometimes called, it's not exactly the same, but very related to off-policy learning. And passive learning means you just want to evaluate what you have. I'll talk about it right now. So passive learning. Passive reinforcement learning says you have your policy. That is, at least it knows which states are there, and you are instructed to what to do. For example, if you study hard, it's a policy. If you study hard, you don't know exactly where you will go, but your parents say study hard. And then what's the value of studying hard? It's you will find out if you go through your life, then $1,300 will pay off or pay off and pay not. So it's like that paradigm. You have your own policy. See, it's the see what's the value of the policy. That's what passive LL paradigm is. So that's actually related to policy evaluation. So you all remember how you evaluate your policy? It's a small Bellman equation where you have to also remember when you talk about MDP when you talk about value function may not exist without policy, right? It has to have policy. So here in this reinforcement learning paradigm, what you're going to do is you're given the policy. At each stage, you know what to do. Okay? That's given. Then you want to evaluate at each state the value of that policy. It's a bit weird, but you can think about this as in a way of improving your policy. You want to evaluate your policy again. Somehow you can think of this as in the middle of policy iteration. So you all know you are now familiar with this formula, right? Okay. So it is basically the value of your policy is the reward you get from the current state plus the usually beta is discount factor, discounted reward you will get if you follow the current policy, and that's why the transition function, the action is dictated by the policy, right? Okay, so what we don't have in the reinforcement learning is what I'm missing is we don't know the reward, right? We don't know this value RS. It's because assumption is we don't know all the models. And then we also don't know this transition function, right? So anyone can think about how to evaluate a policy with reinforcement learning. No idea. So one straightforward idea might be you learn the reward. You just wander around, and then and then you see what's the reward of the each state, and then you can use it. Also, you can learn the transition function too. Do you think that idea makes sense? Obviously, it makes sense. If you learn it, then you can use it, right? So what? And then the question is there any easier method than that? Since this learning seems to be a bit awkward. Let's look at this simple example. Again, the arrows means the policy, right? What action to take in each state, and then you want to know the value of the each state if you follow this policy, and if you apply this policy evaluation technique, then you may get these values for these states. And assuming, I guess you have some discounting factor. So one thing you think about is if you follow this policy and assuming also there is some possibility of even if you move left, you may end up some other place or something like that. So this sequence may not be identical, right? Because the transition function is not deterministic. However, you may have somehow if you follow the policy, you may have this kind of trajectory, right? Then how you update the values? The question here is, I gave you the policy, that is, what action to take in each spot, very simple policy, and then you follow that several times. At one point, 2 points, you get the reward. At one point, you get penalty. Suppose you have a set of these, what each of these sequences called episode or so. You have several episodes here. How you update your value function?
You back up the final value to
this state. Right. So you want to map like this state, value of this state, right? So you can, so here, value of this state, you think, it's a 0.9 discounting factor. I'll say the value of this state is here 0.9, right? 0.9 again, right? And then average, you can average all the values you can get for each of the episodes and average all of them at state 3.3. Then you get the value function. Do you think that works? Okay. Or are you all think that makes sense? Reasonable? Oh yeah, sure. Should be reasonable. Should be. Right? So one naive approach, rather than constructing really complex transition models, as I said, it's called direct estimation technique, is just average this reward to go for each state, and then average for each state. So if you go back, simple idea here is you sometimes it's called epoch, episode, whatever. So one for example, this state, you can just, as someone said, you can apply this discounted reward factor, and you can assign the values for each state, right? Here it's like 0.57, and then here it might be less than that, right? 1.2, right? It has it might be like 0.3 something. There's nothing here, so this state value will be somewhere around 0.4. So you eventually, this idea is very nice, but if you experience a lot with you also right now the policy is fixed, then you can evaluate the policy by just following the policy many many times, and for each state you assign the reward to go value, which is just discounted from the final reward you get. Then average all of them, you get approximation of the value function for the policy in state, each of the state. So you all think that okay? Okay, I think that's very reasonable approach. So the problem is this technique is it converges very slow. You need a lot of episodes to have a correct convergence to the correct value function. The biggest flaw is it just averages this reward to go from each state. Technique is very simple, but it just doesn't learn the domain transition model, and it just doesn't exploit this obvious Bellman relationship between value functions. So again, how we incorporate the constraints we have before we discuss this idea was, what if we learn the reward function and transition function, right? So here, are you all following? Have any question? It's on this side, or it's just unassigned, right? That also means that state is not frequently visited by the current policy. It may not be at all, right? Okay, good point, very good point.
So if we just let them walk in the world and learn the transition function, transition matrix there,
after you learn correct domain model, then you can apply any of the Markov decision processes solution techniques.
Yeah, so the main point is to learn the constituent matrix. It's not the main point.
But if you anyhow be able to, if you are able to learn the transition function and reward function, you can apply MDP techniques.
Yeah, I'm saying if I just learned the transition matrix, not learning the reward, and then I run the value iteration or something.
If you don't know the reward, there is no point of applying any of...
The goal has some, right? Then if you run the value iteration, then it
so will... In this definition, Markov decision processes that I defined, there is no goal. It's just reward. You need to have reward function.
So we don't know our goal is, so every state doesn't have any reward function, and we don't know the transition.
In this reinforcement learning problem, we usually don't know the reward function, we don't know the transition function. Oh, those are just rewarding states.
Yeah, I'm just saying, just use those rewarding states, and the others will know, and run the value iteration.
Mm-hmm.
Then those rewards will
propagate. Sure. So, this is a more complex approach called adaptive dynamic programming. Why adaptive? Why the adaptive word here? So you know, dynamic programming is basically means just policy evaluation, right? So adaptive means we don't know these two. We don't know exact reward or transition function, but we somehow, as I said, if you travel around the world, world state space, then you may be able to figure out the reward and transition function, and use that for the dynamic programming method. Then you can calculate the value function. So do you think this is better than previous approach, which is just following the policy and update the values of each state by averaging? Adaptive means learning reward and transition function. Do you think this is better or previous approach, which is just... So what's the advantage of this approach, and what's the advantage of previous approach? So direct estimation doesn't involve no computation, actually. It accumulates the values for each state and then average them. While this, you explicitly construct reward and transition function and solve this dynamic programming problem. So this is more heavily computationally expensive solution technique. You all agree? Okay, and then the question here was how we estimate the transition model. Basically, you just average of this SAS prime happens, the portion of the state S and take action A, what's the probability of going to S prime? You can just accumulate some of the numbers, then you can also estimate the transition probability. So, there is one reason why I'm showing you this curve. Basically, it is this number of epochs means you follow your policy, right? And then doing that, you compute this reward and transition function. So as you go along, accumulated experience, you get better target model, and you quickly converges to whatever for each state. Like for each of the states, after like 200 or so epochs, this adaptive dynamic programming approach converges around 200 epochs. I'll show you why this is important later. Anyways, then the second, the other approach is very online approach. It's a bit different. It's called a temporal difference learning approach. So again, you are given a policy. You know what action to take in each state, okay? And then here is an idea of updating your current value function for your policy without explicitly constructing the transition model. Okay. So the policy updated value is the current value function, value of the current state. So in state S, you took some action and you move on to S prime. You don't care which action you take because that's defined already, because, right? It's the policy is given to you. So if you follow the policy in the current state, you move on to the S prime. Then update value for the current state is current state plus, this alpha is usually very small, like 0.05, plus reward, plus next state value function, value minus the current state, value of the current state. So this is called temporal difference learning.
So temporal difference learning, adaptive dynamic programming in temporal difference, seems to be that this one is more of a local update, like a localized thing, whereas that one, because it's using dynamic programming, so this is more like a greedy approach versus that is like a dynamic programming kind of approach. I'm basically trying to draw a parallel where in networks, for example, when the router table is being calculated, there are two different algorithms. One is just Dijkstra. Dijkstra is greedy.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be that. I mean, is there any bigger difference between the two, or?
Basically, one is this one doesn't construct the domain model explicitly. So obviously, it will pay the price, right? However, the prior approach, which is ADP, constructs the domain model explicitly, and then it may take advantage of that. It needs more computation. However, this is more like just online update style. I'm sorry I laughed, because the reason I left is you just said network routing table, and I felt like very, oh my, what network routing table? You may have something. I think I believe you have very good idea, but I just don't know what to say about routing table. So anyway, so if you, let's think about this formula a little bit. It's not hugely complex formula. It's even, I think, simpler than this, right? Do you all agree? A bit simpler, but if you think this is actually 1 minus alpha, right? 1 minus alpha of the current value plus alpha amount of projected value, which is usually projected value of the current state is reward of the current state plus the projected reward if you follow the current policy. So this portion is the actual new sample you get from your current exploration. You are now taking your policy, following the policy, and you observe the reward, and what you have is the value table that assigns values for each of the states. So what it does is it simply combines the current value function, current value of the state plus this amount of update. In doing that, it does a weighted average 1 minus alpha plus alpha. 1 minus alpha, so you don't want to maintain a little bit of your current value function, right? And then you update small amount. That's the actually potentially correct value for your value function. Okay? And then it is also, what's interesting about this is this portion is very close to the actual Riemann equation, right? One difference is you don't consider this transient function. So why this works, let me give you a simple conceptual idea why it works. This is online mean estimation. How you update a mean in an online fashion. So if you follow the equation, you can see that the eventual average might be just the current average plus this 1 over n plus 1 of next sample minus the current average. So basically it's just, you can think of this as you are adding the noisy sample, which is right now new sample here, new sample for your value function, and then you take this weighted average with the current value. Have any question about this idea? So the reason I saved this TD update a little bit more is this TD, temporal difference learning, has been successfully used for the backgammon game that I showed you in the start. It was one of the very much successful applications in terms of all level is concerned. Okay, so we have covered currently. Let me give you this. I think whether you remember or not, I don't know, but the ADP, the convergence was around 200 episodes. It converges almost, but the TD update, which is less computationally extensive, doesn't aggressively construct transition model, it takes much more episodes, epochs. So there is some trade-off. One is very eagerly constructs the transition model, converges fast, more computationally expensive. The other is a simple update of the values of the state. But it pays a price, it takes much more time in terms of converging. You need much more training data. So here are the comparison that I have set. Direct estimation, what's direct estimation? What? Average of the value, projected values of each state. Adaptive dynamic programming, temporal difference learning, these have all separate and different characteristics. So depending on your application, you select one of them. So I talked about passive LL, which is given you are given a policy and you want to learn the value. And then active LL is, well, I'll update the policy. I'll find what's the best in your life. So, I think this is what Nan has suggested. The naive approach is, rather than having a policy starting with, you just randomly wander around the world, construct reward function, transition function, then you solve them. Then basically you are done. Will this work? Right, you have to have a reward function. So that's learned, that will be learned. As you walking around the world, like, I don't know, if you go to Costco at lunchtime, you get free lunch almost. I don't know, any of you know that, but something like that. You just know the reward. You learn the reward as you wander around the world. The reward is part of the model that you will learn when you take the random exploration.
I'm just saying, if you walk around, you could go 30, 40, 50, you know, you can start walking in circles and you never notice this and you never get to reward.
That's a good point. So you need to have some very good exploration knowledge, right? You don't want to visit the known state again. You have to find this unexplored state space, and then that's a good point. Yeah, just so that's a very good point. Oh, and then actually, that's in the small font. It says, "How about for systematically explore?" That's what may cover your concern. The question here is whether this will work. How many of you think this will work? What?
It will work. It just will work well.
Right. It will work. The problem is, it may take too much time. Right? It may take too much time. So let's get a bit smarter. One way to get smarter is, so you have you can build the model. You explore a little bit, then you can build a model, reward function, transition function, using the known model, you compute your policy, right? With whatever that policy, let's say policy iteration. You compute your policy, and then you follow the policy, and during the following the policy, you may find, oh, the model is a bit incorrect. You update your model, then you again, compute the policy again. You iterate this process. How about this idea? Will this idea work well? So it's like a if you do some drug, you feel good, and so do drug again, you feel better, again and again. I picked a very bad example. It's like that. What? Someone says it's actually good? I believe so. Right. So it is, the problem here is, if you don't explore the world enough, right? And then just hurriedly decide what to do. What will happen is, you will fall into very local minimum. So it's like, if you think, for example, Yeah, let's draw. How about stealing? If you steal something, not get caught, you feel, oh, that's very profitable. Again and again, you only follow that model rather than work hard and then buy something. So that's the problem of this naive, greedy approach. So what's the idea then? Is there any way to combine the learned model and then also doing some exploration? So that's in the first part, passive LL, I talked about how you update your value function. That's one thing important in the LL. Second important thing is, well, if you want to update your policy, how you explore the world. You may want to so for example, if you know enough of, you think that you know enough of the world, and you say, okay, I get enough of the world. I think rather than stealing, working hard is better. I'll do that again and again and again. That's exploitation. You think you know the world enough, you exploit your knowledge. And then second thing is exploration. Rather than exploit whatever you know, how about just working hard is boring. I'll just take some music lesson and go to American Idol. You may appear tonight, right? Anyone watch American Idol? No one? Oh my. I think it's bad sample. These people are bad sample from average American, I think. It's collection of some weird people, I guess. But anyway, okay. That's the joke. So what here is, so how you combine this? Okay.
Two points. One is there's sometimes a limit on how much exploring you can do before you need to start doing some stuff.
Sure.
There's a total number of actions, so you can take half the actions available.
Right.
So there could be a middle ground you have to reach.
Sure.
The other point is that you can do random restarts within the terrain. Neural networks do this a lot. If you're worried about following local minimums, you can say, I'll look at this other person, where is he in life? He looks happier than where I'd be if I was stealing all the time. And you go, aha, well, how can I get there? So you can realize the release in a local maximum. And know where to go elsewhere.
So random restart is a very powerful function, actually. It's very related. But if you can do random restart, that's pretty good function you want to have. For example, in the life, you want to restart sometimes. Have you seen the game of last night, Memphis versus Kansas?
No.
You haven't. How many of you watch it? Possibly none. It's another.
Again, this is TV. I think you might be the only person that's seen the last.
So, anyways. In the usual LL, random restart is a very powerful function. And I agree, if you have a random restart action,
you want to use it. You don't necessarily need to be able to just jump around in your world. You just need to be able to look at someone else within the world that is also an agent and learn from what they are.
That's the multi-agent problem. And we are talking about here one agent, no random function, no random restart function. There is some such constraint here. Why not have some oracle that can tell you what to do? Sure. So yeah. So one thing I really, one of the thing that you mentioned was important is that if you have some time limit. Exploration and exploitation, you definitely stop at some point and then start exploit. I think that's well built. I'm not sure exactly about that. But anyways, let's go forward. The same approach, it is constructing domain model, but how you... So if you construct the somehow you explore the domain model, and then you build some of them. In some of the states, you're definitely sure what will happen. For example, if you do drug, you know what will happen. You know immediately, I guess. So you know something about the world. But how you, and then the by greedy policy, given the known world, you need to do always drug, right? That may go into local minimum. So you need some exploration rather than just greedily following the computed policy. So how you combine the exploration naturally with the greedy policy is the question here. So one way to do that is, I just say this Q function. Have you ever heard of Q function of MDT? So Q function is just like a value function. It's the value of the action A in state S. It's just the reward of the state, and then projected reward you get after you take the action A. So it's just the value of the action A and then given state. So usually, if you have a value function, you can compute which action is the best using this Q function computation, right? So rather than, when I say following the learned value the computed value function greedily, that means you just greedily follow the action that maximizes this equation, right? You will follow this? If this is hard, just let me know. So idea is, rather than follow, so if you want to explore, as I said, if you just greedily follow this function, that's exploitation. Since the assumption here is RS and T transition functions are just incomplete. In that, what you want to do is, one solution you might want to do is, you just draw some probability. Let's say, at some point, like 10%, I'll take, rather than taking this greedy action, I'll take some random action. Right? By doing that, you get is, rather than just exploiting what you learned, you may find some new state and new information. Okay. And then, second idea is, it's called Boltzmann's. I'll just show you all the stuff. It's a well-known exploitation idea. So, in a state, chance of taking action A is proportional to exponentiated Q function. But it is probability, right? If this Q value of this action is the best, it has the big best chance of being taken, but it is not definite. The other property is, the T is called temperature. What if T is high? If T is very high, all the action look like very similar. Right? It is still, it depends on the, so what happens, this Boltzmann exploration idea is, at the start, you give very large T. So even though you learn some domain model, you may not exploit the domain model quite well. As you go along, you're sure that you learn the domain model enough, then you decrease the temperature T, then you may act very greedily. It's very related, yes. Yes. The whole idea of this temperature is definitely from simulated annealing. The whole purpose of this is, since you don't know exact model, rather than exploit again and again, you want to digress and then explore the other parts of the world. So this is an alternative way. So what is here? The idea is the previous idea is given the value function, you can compute the Q function, and then you can either take greedy action or take some random action, and how you decide a policy that combines this exploration and exploitation. And then you make this argument further. What happens is, what if you can make a value function that encourages you to explore? So, and then you can just follow that value function with your Q value, Q function of the I, just when you compute the Q function. So that can be done by simply, the new value function is not the combination of the projected value, rather you have some function that's related to not just the transition probability and then projected value function. You have this new component, which is number of actions this action is taken at this state. So what is the desirable property of this function to make the exploration possible? Idea? So you want to give higher value where the action has not been taken enough in this state, right? Any volunteer for this simple idea? Okay. So basically, if you decide some number, let's say 100, if you took this action hundreds of times, I'll say that I will just return the value, the projected value as it is. But If the number of actions taken at that state is less than some number, you give the maximum reward for that action. So it naturally suggests actions being taken that has not been taken frequently enough. So it just makes you explore naturally. Okay? You all get the idea? Okay. I'll just move forward. Okay. So, until now, what I have described to you was building domain model explicitly, right? In the this active OLL, I just described after you somehow updated your reward and transition model, how you compute your policy, value function, and then compute the policy so that you can combine exploration and exploitation at the same time. What if you can ignore again? Again, you want to ignore the transition model. You don't want build the target domain model. And then two techniques that have been I have told you about without get buying domain model. The one was direct estimation. The other was
temporal
or something, right, correct. Temporal difference, TD. You can just say TD, or just TD based something, right? It is domain free. That means it doesn't build the domain model. It just updates the value function. Just as before, it just updates the current values of the state. When you pass this state and you see the next state as prime, you update the value based on the values you have with this equation. Can you incorporate? How can you incorporate the exploration in this formula? So that's where this Q learning comes. So obviously, this temporal TD learning cannot be well combined with exploration and exploitation. So what happens is, what if you can write this function as this? So you know this. This is the usual. This optimal Q function can be represented as reward of the current state plus projected value of the maximum Q values in the next state. Right? Okay. So just like TD update, which is just updating the value of the current state, you just update Q value. So the whole idea is just like when you updated the value of the state, you just update the Q value, which is Q value is the value for state and action. Okay, you update the Q value by this amount, which is again approximated value of this correct value. So it's like noisy sample. And weighted average with the current Q value, then you can update the Q value function. So what do you think of this? Do you think this will work? So it's just basically you have in the Q learning you have the table for each state and action, right? And update those values as you go along. So it is proven that this Q value update and Q learning actually can converge to the optimal. Okay, this is almost the final slide. I'll just say one thing. So I talked about two things today. One is active learning, passive learning, when you are given the policy, how you update your values. And the second is active learning. You somehow explore the domain and exploit combined so that you take as much as you can also explore the world you have. And then I didn't talk about this policy relation reinforcement learning. Rather than just updating your value function, you may just update the policy function too, right? So the question is how you design a policy with parameters. So one thing you can think about is some multinomial distribution of the actions in each state. Do you think that will work? So basically this parameter here is the multinomial probability parameter. So you want to make sure, so if you, when you take action A and you get big reward in state S, you update the probability of that action being taken by the policy. I'll just give you the idea that this direct policy gradient algorithm actually works quite well. You just look for the other literature. This is the final slide. This is summary. So once again, I'll just make sure that you take two key points. One is how you update, right? How you update your value or policy given your experience in the world. That's one thing. How you use the data, right? That differs from each other. Some is building the model. Some is just updating values. Some is updating values of the state, updating values of the Q function. And then you can think of this as each of the trajectory of the word episode. That's actually some sample, right? It's a sample of the word, sample of your experience. And so it's very related to sampling, how you sample your word so that you get better estimation of the values. I think Raul will talk about the sampling-based planning techniques next lecture. Sampling overall is a bit unique. It is very non-determined because it can do explore and exploit in the world. So where to sample is very important. That's why you need exploration versus exploitation. And if you want to read more on RL, I'll suggest one paper, Important Sampling for Policy Gradient Updates by Christian Shelton. And then you should have this question definitely, that is, is there any factored LL? I think MDP has factored MDP. Obviously there are such techniques. So you, if you wonder about this, how the factored RL has been studied, MaxQ, hierarchical abstract machine, option, and these are all about factored action representation. Also, there is also something called relational reinforcement learning. So these are the recommended reading if you want to read, and that's the end of the lecture. So boring, huh?